And now for part two of my conversation with Abby Vasquez of avtarotreading.com. We start off with soulmates, on to politics and readings, my favorite aspect, conventions of tarot that could be outdated, and then caveats surrounding counterfeit decks. She pulled the cards that will be the inspiration for Monday's meditation and more. Really do hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did. Thanks. Welcome to Blue Lightning Healing Meditations. My name is Susie Parker Goins. My pronouns are she, her. I'm a channel, so I bring forward your guides so you can connect more easily with them, allowing you to have soul-deep conversations with them whenever you want. I'm an energy healer, a past life explorer, a mentor. My goal is to empower you by teaching you techniques that you can use on your own. We work together to find and identify the blockages to your growth and release them, inviting you to explore your possibilities. I'm available for phone and virtual sessions, and with Washington State opening up, I will be at some of these in-person events. The best way to contact me is through Susie@BlueLightningHealing.com. You can also contact me through my website, BlueLightningHealing.com. There, you'll find links in a fully searchable database of my podcasts, a link for my Ko-fi.com account to support me in my efforts, and a full calendar of events so that you know where I'll be online and in person. Oh yeah, and the appointment scheduler, that's there too. Thanks so much. Blessings. Gonna find the one?
Oh!
You know,
that has sent me off into looking into the soulmate and twin flames. I've got a podcast on that, and I think that Lorelei Shamayo is going to do a panel on that.
Oh wow.
And it's interesting to see how people think they're interchangeable, and I don't think they are. And
yeah.
So there are people, I will tell right off the bat, I'm not going to tell you what corner to stand on what day, at what time, wearing a flower, and then the one will walk by, because there are so many variables, including right. The partner.
Yeah. It's like, it's not just you, honey.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like being a romance GPS.
Gosh, that's such a loaded question. It's like,
yeah.
Like one of those conversations that you never have at the dinner table is like politics and religion.
Uh-huh.
I feel like as readers, one of the questions that I never like to get is, when am I going to have the one, or when am I going to get the one?
Yeah.
And I love trying to figure out how to not wiggle out of it per se, but it's like, let's dismantle this one, quote unquote, air quotes, silently, thing. Let's change how we're perceiving that, because I feel like modern society, religion, everything is kind of put together this package of what the one is, quote unquote. And it's just like, oh, that is so detrimental to everyone.
It is. I also will ask, what's your relationship with yourself? And that shuts down a lot of people.
Oh, yes. Oh,
but even that perception has been challenged by somebody else, challenged that perception to me recently. And I'm okay.
What happened?
Yeah. Oh, no, it was, I just read something on the net, and it's like, you don't have to be perfect for somebody else to come along. Then there's the perception that you're falling in love with somebody's potential, not with who they are right now.
Yeah.
I know that one was an eye opener. Doing the research for the soulmate twin flame one, it's like, if you're focused on what you want to do, what brings you passion, instead of looking up and saying, are we there yet? Are you the one? Are you the one? Aaron Doty, his YouTube channel, gave me that insight, and I was like, oh, okay, focus on what you love doing. Your vibration mm-hmm. raises, and you're going to bring that person to you.
Exactly. That's how I understand it anyway. I also tell ladies that come to me with that, it's like, don't worry, honey. It's not like you're going to blink and they're going to like pass you by and you're never going to see them again. Like, they will run into you like a brick house. Like,
yeah.
It will be obvious. Like for me, I mean, my wife and I, we are married, but we don't necessarily call each other soulmates, but we know that we have a soul contract with each other, and we are the best of friends, and we're playmates, and we are 12-year-old little boys that like to have fun outside and play in the dirt. And I guess you could totally throw the soulmate word at it, and we'd be fine with it. But we know that we have work that we're doing together this go around, and that we are in our soul group, whatever that happens to be, and whoever that happens to include. But we're having a grand old time today.
And that's the cool part. That for me is the cool part. It's like, yeah, I've been with my husband, over 30 years. And I can still make him laugh. He can still make me laugh, and we still have a good time at it. So,
Perfect.
yeah.
But you two aren't necessarily wrapped up in the ideology around, are you my soulmate? Is this for real? Is this, are you here to complete me in some way? Like, you both are coming as two complete whole packages that are sharing this existence with each other, instead of broken soul trying to be mended in other broken soul. So that just creates that, you know, codependency loop that we all know and love so well.
Yeah, I feel like we are kind of like litter mates. We're having a good time. We're part of the same soul part, not part of the same higher self. But
yeah,
that twin flame thing, people think it's such a great thing. And the people I've talked to have not had that positive experience with it. But like I said, that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah. I would love to dive into that in a non-romantic sort of way, because it's just like, for my community, it seems like twin flame equals romantic connections. And I would love to understand it outside of that, like outside of the we're meant to be together kind of thing. So I would totally love to, like, if you do a podcast or a thing on that, I want to like be at least an ear or a fly on the wall, because I need to hear other people's point of view and prospects on that, that doesn't necessarily only include the romantic connection with somebody. Because I legit think like people can have twin flames that are not romantic. Like I would say that my godmother and I could be very well like two parts of the same like brain space.
Okay.
But that's my godmother, and she doesn't talk to me sometimes, and then when we're around each other, we're besties and we speak each other's language and we know each other like we're each other. But that's my godmother, that's not my romantic partner. So anyway, I have questions.
I had never thought of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Lorelai's gonna do a soulmate twin flame panel. I think I want to bring up that question.
There you go.
That's an excellent question. I will credit you for it.
Aww.
My friend Abby Vasquez asked this question.
She wonders, can this happen? Can it not be romantic?
That's a really fascinating thing. And that's just like way off on a tangent there. So,
of course. Okay. I'm good for them.
Yeah, thank you. Me too. Squirrel.
Yes.
So we talked about what you do, how it helped you. And you've already talked about what a session is like with you. You get information. That's amazing to me that you get information even as you're shuffling cards.
Yeah.
And
I love
the cards
that
seem to be an afterthought.
Oh my gosh, it does. And I have to remember that, because I've had the literal experience of going to a tarot reader looking for a tarot reading, and she didn't pull a single card for me. It was purely a conversation, and how disappointed I was because I did not get what I had expected. So it's like when people come to me expecting a tarot reading, I want to make sure that I at least pull a few. But I do hope that the information that was provided kind of outweighs the accidental disappointment of me not having a full spread laid out on my table. So
yeah, and maybe that's my experience with readings, is like I'll go in and ask that question, what do I need to know right now? And however it shows up, I think releasing that expectation is actually a lesson in and of itself.
Yeah, very good point. Aw, I love reading for that question.
Do you?
Yeah, because it's a mixed bag. I tend to like things that are difficult for me to do. And directly answering a question is easy. Like if you ask me, like, you know, which shoes do I need to wear at the basketball game tomorrow? I can probably spell that out for you. But if you're asking me this open-ended kind of, I don't know, projecting, what do I need to know currently about the thing or not about a thing, just in general, I'm like, all right, so I'm shuffling the cards, I'm hopping into your energy and kind of just feeling around, is how I feel like it. I feel like my eyes are closed and I'm just feeling things. I'm feeling things. And then I'm shuffling, and then there's the first idea that comes to mind. And then there's the second idea. And then it starts off with a train, and it just goes and it goes and it goes. And you're like, oh yeah, there's that and there's that, and there's more that shows up. So I like that question, but I like it because it's difficult. It's not super easy for me to do.
Yeah, yeah. Especially just during, I would use the cards to help me through that question. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. So now I'm going to play. Ha, ha, ha. I'm going to play with that. So let's see. I don't know. Do I have any other questions? Do you have any other thoughts? I know
Mm-hmm.
before we end up, I want you to give us your websites, and those links are going to be in the description box too. Any other thoughts?
Let's see.
I mean, I could do something absurd, like what if we had Tarot in governmental decisions? How? No, that's.
Oh my God. You know how, like, okay, so especially during the election, like when there was all this like upheaval that was stemming upwards, I remember being fooled and not understanding what it was that I was reading. And it was just because I had never once thought insurrection was going to happen. That never crossed my mind whatsoever. Unfortunately, the cards don't exactly say insurrection. They don't say that. They say Eight of Pentacles with a tower. What? Okay.
Big
Like,
change. Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
And I did. There is an Australian reader I follow called Ellie Dreams Down Under, and she'll do a whole lot. She's Australian, but she'll do a lot of American politics reads. And I'm like, oh my
Nice.
gosh, she's well better versed in what's going on than I am. And I live here.
Yeah,
So,
well, I feel like that distance gives
yeah.
her what is that? That objectivity that
Yeah.
sometimes we don't have, being very emotionally connected to our political structure. So
Yeah.
it's just like, if you say Republican around the wrong person, you start to get tinglys and you want to go hide,
Yeah.
So it's like we obviously have these emotional responses. But if you come to me and say, like, I don't know, Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, I'm like, ooh, I want to know. Tell me all about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's gonna go a whole nother way if I don't stop it, and I'll stop it right now. Because it will just go bang. But yeah, I do have that morbid fascination with other people's lives, and maybe that's what makes me a reader. I don't know.
Well, what is your favorite aspect about cards or tarot or oracle? Like, what's your connection to them?
My experience with them is that I learned them intuitively, and it worked well for me because, as I told you about the woman in the office, and I was able to shift what the textbook was. For me, the cards, there is, I think, so much, I don't know if it's gravitas, but there is so much meaning attached to Tarot that the Oracle cards, I can look at them one at a time and get a meaning from them. One of the cooler things about it is that I do these online events. So there's one on Sundays that I'll do called Winnie's Angels, and Winnie will ask me to pull three cards. So I pull them, and Reverend Carmen Murphy, who's another one of the panelists, will say, if you drop a card, you still need to pick it up. It doesn't matter if you don't like the cards, they're there for a reason. And I can hear her and see her shaking her finger at me, because there was once that like five or six cards just fell out of my hand. And I heard Carmen saying, no, you got to read them. And there are times I need to be patient with what other readers are saying, because I'll look at the cards and go, I don't get it. But then there's information that another reader is giving based on their cards, and then I'll see a connection. So for me, it's a lot of patience, because I want to know an answer, but there are times it's like, okay, just wait and start talking, start pulling in the information and see how it all connects. And frequently I do have that, oh, kind of moment where there it is. I got what this is all about. And being willing to pull those clarification cards, it's like, yeah, I don't get what that one means here, and throwing down some more cards. I just love that there are so many different kinds of cards.
My gosh, there is.
And the imagery, like the deck I just got from you, the Beyond Lemuria. I've got a 7-year-old friend who pulled three cards for me the other day. And she said, look, I pulled some pretty cards for you. It's like, I have that deck now. So I was able to pull them from the deck and look at the cards and do that reading for me. The variety, the images, and I understand that not every deck's going to resonate with me. It may look good at first. There was a time I bought this lot of cards in search of one particular deck, and I looked at the deck that I was focusing on. I was like, yeah, I don't like it. Oh well.
Yeah,
So,
I have that on occasion. But
yeah.
I also have a machine that if I do get a set of cards in that I don't care for, I can just, sell them. So that
Yeah.
keeps my wife very happy.
Yeah. So you can cycle them through. Yeah. And there are so many things I learned about cards, like, oh, it needs to be given to you, or you need to sleep with it in your pillow, which makes it lumpy, to be honest. And just, all these things, and the whole, you were talking about how your mom said, don't take money for it. It's like, there are so many conventions attached to it. And intuitively, I'm like, no, I'm gonna do it this way because this is what resonates with me.
That's
Whether
actually what I'm going to be talking about for Jessica's thing is demystifying a lot of those misconceptions and common beliefs that are around tarot cards. Because, like you said, the whole it must be given. I've never seen a deck work better because it was given versus not. I find that people resonate with the deck they resonate with. And the gift may be a gesture, it may be appreciation, it may be a lot of things. It may not be the gift of here's psychic intuition contextualized within the 78 cards of this particular deck. That's just like one of like a million and a half other things that we can kind of break apart a little bit and kind of explore. But I also wonder, like, where does that convention come from? Why must it be gifted?
I don't know. The one time I did give a deck to a friend of mine, she loved cats, but the deck I gave her had dead cats in it and it didn't resonate with her, and it took me a while to figure out. It's like, that wasn't appropriate. So frequently it's the giver who's way off base.
I actually make a point of not gifting decks of cards because I figure I understand that person at a particular level. That's just the little mask that they wear for me, right? I understand that mask, but who they are might resonate with this instead. And I may not know that person at all. And so I feel like it's their responsibility to pick out. Well, if I'm educating someone, I always tell them a standard Rider-Waite Smith deck is your first. And then in addition, so two decks. Then the one that you find that has the prettiest images, or the one that you're most pulled to, the one that you connect to visually the most, and have that as like your sister deck that you look at and you play with and you get familiar with and you touch and you bond with while you learn off of the other deck of cards. And with that, I find that people end up using the Rider-Waite Smith as that old steed style of tool that they always trust because they've never been precious with it. It's always just been the tool. It's the tool. It's all the books. It's
That's a utility deck. That's the one that goes in and it teaches you. And being a standard deck, everybody, that's a common language people have when they use that deck. You know somebody else is probably going to have been exposed to that deck. And then there are the derivatives from it. And that elaborates that correlating the elements with the suits and all of that. So it helps to expand. It's a great basis, but I like my earth magic deck. That's the one I use mostly. I mean, yeah,
I do
mostly.
find that anybody should use any deck that resonates for them. It doesn't have to be a 78 card Rider-Waite Smith system. It can be Thoth, it can be Marseille, it can be Visconti, it can be Oracle, it'd be some hybrid version of both that happens to have circular edges. Who cares? It's like if you are getting the information that you need out of that set, epic. If that changes over time, even better. Get more.
Yes,
Get more
yes.
cards.
There's what is the deck I had used, Tarot of the Spirit, and it used Jungian imagery and abstract art, and I was really into it after my first deck. And so I sadly I have it somewhere. I'm sorry. I put that one away a long time ago, but still it was a deck that provided me with a lot of interesting psychological and insights into the inner workings of things going on. So there's a deck for everything.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like it doesn't have to be mass marketed. It can be an indie deck that maybe you got from like, I don't know, Kickstarter or Indiegogo. Like I have such a collection of independently produced cards. I just suggest that you make sure that your deck is not a counterfeit edition. Just because counterfeits in the tarot world is so prolific, and so it's pretty easy to accidentally come across one.
How do you, are there any indicators for that?
Yeah, there's several that I would say because, for instance, let me actually grab this one. When people are, sorry, I'm way far away from the mic. There you go. So
Oh, we're
these
good.
are two decks that get counterfeited a lot.
Okay, now I know the first one, the
Light Seer. This is Caroline Miss's Architect cards.
Okay.
So the funny thing is like any deck that is produced has the potential to be counterfeited. It's because that's like the nature of the business. That's why there's counterfeit purses. That's why there's counterfeit shoes. And that's business these days.
Yeah.
So what people look for when it comes to counterfeit products is that the listing, if they but were purchased online, the listing doesn't really make sense. And the pictures are the same pictures for every other listing that you see, because that means that provider didn't take their own photos. That provider didn't write their own listing. They probably just copied and pasted, especially if it does not make sense. So just like literally like, that's all keywords. It makes no sense. Another thing that people will see is like decks that were supposed to be in rigid, hard, like two-part boxes, if they're all of a sudden in a tuck box with a not a barcode like here, like the ISBN code, but like a square, I forget what the code,
the QR?
QR, thank you. Thank you so much for that.
Okay.
That square.
Now I'm gonna check my Light Seers.
There you
it's
go.
Two part, it's got the okay.
You got the ISBN, you will very likely have an authentic deck. But if it has like the QR code on the back, that's almost an immediate giveaway. I only know one deck that does that deliberately. And that's it's like a mermaid tarot deck. But she has it even on her website that she uses a QR code for hers. But she's the only one that I know that does that.
Okay.
And they do the QR code so that they can reduce the size of the packaging and also reduce paper by not including a guidebook. So if you have a deck of cards that is supposed to have a guidebook, especially if it's like Hay House, for instance, they come with guidebooks. 9 times out of 10, they come with guidebooks. And they say, oh, here's a QR code, download the guidebook from here. I can almost tell you that's a fake. And it's just, it's worth, if you don't know, then like also look at the price. Like, did you buy it for $5? It's probably a fake. It's probably a fake, because it's like even the most inexpensive decks of cards still have a manufacturer cost, which is about $16 to $19 is the deck that you're gonna get. If you got it for about $9 to $5 or $5 or $10, it's probably counterfeit, just because of economics on that.
Okay.
But
and that's an economic consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not like it's an energetic thing. You can still read the cards, but you still want to honor the author and the artist and
right. See, because that's me. That me as having previously been a designer, I want to honor that artist's work and the hardship that she got into getting into this status, right? What she had to go through. Especially, I know what Chris Ann's story is on the Light Seers Tarot. So it's like, dude, you deserve all my respect, and my hard-earned money needs to go to you, right?
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to like a counterfeit deck, I don't know who put that together. I don't know who yanked those images. The quality of the images are going to be different. The paper quality is going to be different. The card box is going to be different. I don't know who put that together. And I've only had the experience once where I was playing with I didn't know it at the time, a counterfeit edition of The Wild Unknown. And it was a small mini. And that deck felt vicious. I didn't know that cards could be that way. And that was just my experience with it. I don't know why it was like that, but I know that as soon as I made a little container for it to be in, it calmed down like a good snug in the rug, but it did not like me. It did not want to be around for me, and it did not want to work with me. But I've had, while the known sets that were just fine. And so I don't know if necessarily it being a counterfeit edition had that energy attached to it, but that deck didn't like me.
Okay.
That's fine. And so sometimes that can happen too, where your deck doesn't want to work with you. But I will sometimes tell people if they've accidentally come across a counterfeit deck, it's just to make some art out of it, like repurpose it, turn it into something. Maybe the artist didn't get credit for it, the publisher didn't get credit for it because that one was in creation, then do something good with it. I wouldn't necessarily donate it. Like, don't do that. Don't perpetuate the problem. But like, make something out of it. Make some collages or make some art. Do something with it. But
okay.
Yeah,
oh, that's cool. And that's part of your job though, as a vendor, a tarot card vendor, is to assure that you're putting out the authentic original sets.
Yeah, I have to deal with that a lot actually. And it's because I know some people don't know that they got, a counterfeit deck, and then they sell it to me, and then I'm like, this one's a fake. You didn't see that. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know. Some people don't legit don't know, and some people are just jerks and, sold me what they had, and it's whatever. But I also try to do my due diligence in advance so that I know what I'm buying, so that I don't accidentally provide counterfeit products to the masses. And I know that there's a big push in online deck creators to create websites that carry a catalog of counterfeit cards so that people can go on and kind of do their own due diligence when they're researching a new set. So I know that the author of the True Black Tarot was building a website for that. I know Chris Ann has on her Instagram, she has side-by-side comparisons of counterfeit decks all the time because hers is being ripped off left and right. There's other creators that also have, oh, Circo or Suro. Oh, I forget his last name, or I can't say his last name correctly. He's such a beautiful creator, and I've never pronounced his name correctly, but I know that he is also leaving the tarot industry because his cards are getting ripped off so often. And so it's just like, oh, so sad. It happens,
I understand artists not wanting to have their work continually ripped off. I think it was Waterston, the guy who did Calvin and Hobbes. He stopped drawing because people kept using Calvin in different ways. That was not what Calvin's intention was.
And okay, as a designer and previously like an artist that has to deal with like copyrights and things of that nature, I always wonder and have questions regarding like once a creation has been put out into the world, how much is that still the creator's ownership? How much is that is still that creator's creation anymore? It seems like as soon as it's put out, that it's its own baby. It's its own, it's going, what's going to happen to it is what's going to happen to it. That's why we put things out. And yes, there's unusual consequences to that, like counterfeits and circumstances to which Hobbs gets himself into. But I always wonder like how much of that is actually in our control anymore after it's been produced.
I don't know.
I know, but like I guarantee you, like any deck creator that I ask that question to, they're like, no, I have full ownership. It's still my intellectual property. I'm like, I believe you. How that works logistically.
How are you going to keep it? Well, with the podcast, it got picked up. My podcast got picked up by all these platforms. My original anchor.fm that I've been uploading it to says it's available on 9 platforms. And then I Googled it and I found it on all of these other places. And it just met a criteria of having more than 30 episodes consistent uploaded to and this and that. And so I've gone in and claimed them, the ones that I can find that a way to claim it. And it's what happens after that. I don't know. I mean, it's still out there. And I'm not sad about that. I mean, people are getting information and I hope it's good information, just like with the cards. They're out there and people are getting use from it. But I would rather compensate the originator because they put in that time and effort for it.
And then that's where I think the person who is buying, the patron, that's where they have the responsibility to make sure where they're sourcing their materials from and where they're getting things. Because I also know like right now we're in an age of like usually cheapest is best, and so it's like
Cheap is what we can do, but cheap is also one of those indicators to me of $5 for that deck that I'm seeing over here for, 20 or 40. I do work hard to go to the originator's website.
good. I'm
And
sure they all appreciate
each and every
that.
one.
Right?
I try not to buy from Amazon, I'll tell you that. So, okay.
Oh, no, like, hey, not to knock Amazon. It does have its purpose. And often deck creators will create. See, that's another thing too. You can go to Chris Ann's, for instance, her profile on Amazon and buy the deck there. And,
Yes.
but some people don't know that they can do that. So,
No, they'll just go and try and find something cheap. And okay, so that's a whole nother thing.
Economics and spirituality. Let's talk about that
Okay, so I know we talked earlier when we were getting this set up, is that I do a meditation that's going to be related to it, but I would ask that you draw a card for us. You don't have to interpret it for me. That's fine and whatever. And I'm going to do it. I'm going to say the thing. What is it that we all need to know at the time that this is posted? So this could be a forecast. This could be a, This is going to be one of those. Yeah, you got your guides. Oh, I see the guides all over just doing that little wiggly finger thing, like,
Okay. Do you want me to explain the meaning of the card, more analytical sense, just so that you have like the background of that particular card?
Yeah, if you can do that. If you could also, is it within your purview to take a picture of it and send it to me?
I can totally do that. It'll yes, be a please. Moment though.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. This is going to be a couple of weeks to go up. For, okay. Uh-huh. Oh, my God. So what deck are you using? Oh, you got two. Okay. Yes.
This is the Centennial Edition of the Rider Waite Smith. It has the Tudor Rose with the kind of gray-blue background and Pamela Coleman Smith's signature right there on the corner edges. So that's just to be able to see that. That's what that is. That's why it's different than, say, like the U.S. Games edition of the same which images.
Which has the plaid on the back.
It has the plaid. So this is just a Centennial Edition. As a thicker cardstock, I use this deck as my client-facing working set of cards. I go to this a lot. Okay. Now, when I was shuffling, asking kind of like, you know, your question, what do we need to know? The two cards that pulled out for me or hopped out were both eights. So significance to me there. And I have the Eight of Swords and the Eight of Wands.
Swords and Wands. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so just high level overview with the Eight of Swords, I often think of that as the request for accountability, because often the lead character in this card is bound. And she is blindfolded. And at first glance, we look at it and think she's in peril. She needs to be saved and rescued. But the whole thing is that all the tools that she needs for her escape are directly there in that scene with her. So all she needs is a little bit of fearlessness to go to one of the swords to cut her bindings free. And so the card kind of asks us to be accountable, or, you know, your own gumption, your own energy, your own sense of accountability, and take action on something.
And what stands out for me in that card is that her feet are not bound.
Oh, that is very cool. See?
Yeah.
Ooh, and she's standing on water. So she has a mixture of ground and water down there at the base.
Uh-huh.
So it's just interesting.
Yeah, okay.
Very cool.
Cool.
I love that. And then the other card that showed up was the Eight of Wands.
Uh-huh.
And for me, when this card shows up, it's often talking about speed and action or ideas, like things moving quickly. So it just, I will look forward to hearing what your meditation is going to be about in that regard. But Eight of Swords and Eight of Wands, quick accountability. I don't know.
Quick accountability. It sounds like, I don't know. Let's see. Quick accountability is like things are going to, but that's an overview. So the question is, what do we need to know right now that we need to be accountable for what it is we do? Because things are going to happen. It feels like things are going to change. Okay. But which way? We don't know. That's that quantum mechanics part of it.
Yeah. It always feels like change is more controllable if we take ownership and responsibility for it.
Yeah.
Instead of kind of like allowing it to be like, oh, things are happening around me, I don't know what to do, blah, blah, blah. If you would get out of that mindset to take ownership, or at least as far as we can, and then things can change quickly because we've honored it and acknowledged it.
I like the accountability aspect. We've got to be responsible. And, you know, it's not like being a little kid just running, flailing your arms out in the middle of the street, you know. You've got to stop and take some time,
right?
But don't take too much time.
We no longer have the luxury of being, you know, ignorant to what is happening in whatever shape or form.
Boy, that can cover a whole lot of things. Okay, that'll be an interesting meditation. Thank you. You did. I'm gonna tag Carmen Murphy on this one. She pulled two, she read two.
I did.
She is from the school of Carmen Murphy. Amen. Hallelujah. Well, Abby, thank you so much. This has been a most enjoyable interview. Like, wow, we've gone over an hour and a half.
Nice.
I'm good with that. So if you could please give me, you know, your contact info, websites, all the things, and this is probably going to go up in mid-September.
No problem. So I can be found on the interwebs with my name. Full name is Abigail Vasquez, and it's A-B-I-G-A-I-L. Last name is V as in Victor, A-S-Q-U-E-Z. You can find me everywhere through A-V Tarot. So A is an apple, V as in Victor again, Tarot. On Facebook, I'm at that name. On Instagram, I'm at that name. My website is AV Tarot Reading.
I'll make sure I have the right URL in the description box.
That's hilarious. withness.com. And I'm very easy to find. We make it a point that I'm accessible. I'm able to be located, and Facebook, Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. I'm very rarely on there, but I can be found anywhere. So that's awesome.
Okay. And you've got an Etsy shop, which is AV Tarot Marketplace.
Yes. Yes. Okay. AV Tarot Market, all one word.
Market. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then so people can contact you through those platforms.
Absolutely. You can find me on the website. I have a form that you can fill out and get in touch with me. Instagram, you can send me a DM. Facebook, you can send me a message. So yeah, either way.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you so very much. I'm looking forward to listening to this again.
You're welcome.
I've had some of those where it's been a while since I listened to it, and then I do finally get down to editing. It's like, oh, that was fun.
Good.
I had such a good time. So, yeah. So thank you again. And this is Susie Parker Goins from Blue Lightning Healing. And until next time, blessings.
Bye.